Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Good morning, I'm Dave Kubikian.
Good morning, I'm Kim Hance.
Kim and I are from the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every single weekend talking about lovely things like estate planning and Medicaid planning, wills, trusts, getting older, staying young, all sorts of things, not just bad stuff, I guess, not just bad news all the time.
Right.
We have offices in Albany and Kingston and Saratoga, and we serve the Hudson Valley, the Capital Region, North Country, and kind of all over the state. And we're here every weekend, as I mentioned, taking your phone calls if you dare call us and have questions at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. And it's not every weekend that, Kim, you get to be on the radio. I feel like it's been a bit.
It has been a while.
Especially since you and I have been on together. And it's a pleasure. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
Kind of recovering from our Christmas kickoff last night.
That's right. We had
I shouldn't say recovering, but, you know.
It wasn't something I need to recover from. But it was a good chance for us to kind of decorate the office and get to see everyone.
Right, which is, and I said yesterday was the first time I think I've been in the Albany office all day and not left.
Yeah.
And
Well, you've been running around. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about what exactly you do, because I think people hear that you're Herzog Law Firm and they think certain things, and we're going to get into there's a whole other world that's not really, you know, you could take the law part out of the law firm.
Correct.
And I also know that we've had some mutual clients that I saw in the Saratoga office that you've been talking to on an ongoing basis, and absent questions, we're going to actually get into that fact pattern a little bit, because I think it touches on a little bit of everything that I do and everything that you do. And so Kim is a geriatric care manager, and I use...
So I have to correct you, because we're really trying to change our identity. We're actually now called Aging Life Care Professionals.
I know you are, but I like saying that you're a geriatric care manager, because then I can say my joke, which
like
is you don't look
I'm
that
geriatric.
Old.
I know.
Thank you. But so what exactly does that mean in general? And then we'll get into some stuff here.
So, I mean, it means a lot of things, but I would say the easiest way to describe it is, and I have to give one of my colleagues kudos for this, is we're like professional daughters, if you will. Mm-hmm. So, you know, an aging life care professional, we do everything from just going in and doing an initial assessment for families to kind of help them. As you know, when people arrive to us, sometimes they're in crisis, sometimes they just hear something and they want to know a little more information. So, you know, what we try to do in the aging life care profession is help families identify what is most appropriate and then help them navigate through that system. Because the systems are very complicated. And
they are very complicated. And most people, you're not supposed to be used to that world, right? You're not.
Correct.
It's not like anyone has a lot of experience in dealing with their mom being really old, right? That happens one time, hopefully.
Right.
Hopefully it doesn't happen at all.
Yep.
And there's a lot of bad information. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information that's not necessarily bad, but isn't as perfect as it could be for your fact pattern. And
correct.
So, you know, the normal story would be something like mom fell, dad fell, dad got diagnosed with dementia, and then you're thrown into this world where now you're relying on the hospital to tell you what's next.
Right.
Where are we going from there? And
well,
then when
the
you go to rehab,
the hospital doesn't even tell you half the time. They just give you a list and say, here you go.
Right,
you're
pick five.
Discharged.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you go to, you know, your loved one goes to skilled nursing for rehab, and then you're relying on them to tell you how to pay for it.
Right.
When does Medicare stop paying for it?
Right.
Where do I go? Can I go home? And a lot of times people will say, you can't go home.
Mm-hmm.
And what they mean, maybe you can't go home and live by yourself like you've always been living.
Right.
That's different than whether or not you can go home.
Right.
And so that brings us to this fact pattern that I want to talk about. So this is actual client. We met with them this past week. And obviously no names, but these are very real facts. So husband and wife. and wife is the second spouse of husband. So husband has kids from a prior relationship, prior marriage.
And a shared child with this woman.
They have children together.
So it complicates it, right. So it complicates it.
So they have what we would call a modern family, right? Kids from you know.
Both sides.
Yeah.
Yep.
And she's not doing so hot, and she's been falling down quite a bit. And husband, being a great husband, has been trying to keep wife at home for as long as possible. And they finally have had enough, and she's currently in a hospital. And the next place for her, right? Well, I'm sorry. She was in a hospital. Excuse me. She went to rehab, and now she's beyond the amount of time she could be there. They're moving her from rehab to just basically now you're living in this nursing facility. And the family has options, and I know they've talked to you about some of the different options. So let's first talk about something that's actually not an option for them anymore. So going back home.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, this is what we're thinking this assisted living than this. And they told me what their plan was. And I said, well, let's go back. What about home? Why isn't home an option?
Right.
And have you been informed that we, you know, in the right fact pattern, you can get a lot of care at home and maybe that still works. And they said, well, mom, wife is a fall risk. Husband doesn't think he could do it anymore. He's really concerned about the middle of the night, things like that. And normally you would be talking to a client that has retained us that is thinking about home care. And even though we can get people qualified, your role is to kind of say, well, I don't care what Dave says, this house isn't doable or this house is doable, or you'd actually can get these services that would be fantastic for you. And it's not every day that the client openly admits like home is not going to be an option.
Right.
So what do you do when you meet with a client where they already have in their head a certain destination, right? What is your role in that whole?
Well, a lot of it is listening to them so that I can really understand how they've come to that conclusion. And in this case in particular, they had really not been given a home as an option because of all of the wife's needs. And so one of the things that I really wanted to explore with them, and you know, ultimately the end result was we all decided that placement would be better. Just particularly when you have two aging people, one of the things that I want to make sure of, if we're looking at a home care plan, is that there's a good informal support system that's available to there as a safety net. And while they have children, one of the most active children in this plan is
long ways away.
Correct. Right. So we have to eliminate that. I mean, while she's great and she really wants to see the best for her parents, she if an aide doesn't show up, she can't be the one that's kind of the fill-in. Right. So we want to make sure that there is at least neighbors, you know, church members, someone that we can, you know, call upon. The location, the geographic location of their home wasn't easy for people to get to. So we wanted, you know, that was another consideration that we took in place. And because I think dad, husband was really tired.
Yeah.
I think the support, and he's actually got some medical things going on as well.
I was going to say, because one of the things we talked about was, yeah, maybe she won't qualify for 24/7, likely would not, but he is no spring chicken and he would maybe qualify for a couple hours here and there.
Correct.
And maybe you could cobble together a plan. And that, it, you know, for a number of reasons, that just wasn't going to be attractive. And, oh, by the way, it's long-term care, and we want to kind of plan for the long term. We don't want to say, hey, we'll do home for the next 3 months. I think that's a really, it's penny-wise, pound-fool or something like that. But whatever it is, you know, it's long-term care for a reason, right?
Right.
It's not just a short-term stint somewhere.
Well, and that's the thing that I always talk to families about. So when I'm doing an initial assessment and really talking to them about a plan, I'm looking at the here and now, today. I'm looking 6 months down the road. And then we do the much bigger picture. I mean, in looking, talking about family history, I take into account, you know, the physicality of the people that we're working with. What are your family genes like? I mean, if I've got somebody who is pretty healthy and they're in their late 80s, I mean, we could, you know, potentially be planning for the next 10 years.
Sure.
So we want to put a plan together for them that is going to last that 10 years, that is really going to carry them through and kind of talk about the continuum of care and not just look at, like, this is what we're doing right, you know, this is what we can do right now and we'll see you later. You know, we're kind of done here. I mean, we really want to look at that progression and really talk to them about the different kinds of options that they have that will really hold them for that period of time.
For sure. And oh, by the way, the care we're talking about, if it was going to take place at home, would be through community Medicaid. And even though we like to say, and it's completely true, we can get you qualified. Mm-hmm. I can move things around right now and you qualify December 1st. No doubt about it. Kim will tell you, there's no one's knocking on the door from Medicaid saying, Medicaid is paying for my services. I'm here to provide service. That's not happening until what, March?
Yeah.
March, I mean, or 4 months?
Yeah.
So if it's a plan where, well, we'll see how it goes. See how, you know, we don't want to go through all of that and put you through all of that if it's not needed. And another point I want to bring up, so we talked about their home, and then we said, well, what if it wasn't your home? What if it was an apartment? What if, because one of the things that they wanted to do, one of their top priorities, and every client's different, and you know, our job is to listen to the clients, they want to stay together as long as humanly possible.
Right.
And I don't mean together like in the same town or a block away. They want to be in the same room for as long as possible.
Right.
So we said, well, what about an independent senior apartment that's still a place where you can qualify for community Medicaid, get services, and it's smaller and easier. And even there, you could tell, and he was being very honest with himself. Usually it's the opposite, where people say, I can do it, we can take care of it. And he was saying, I can't. So we eliminate home, and we eliminate another version of home, an apartment or living with a relative, but there are no relatives close.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of knock off community Medicaid.
Yep.
Now, the rehab place, the nursing home that was providing the rehab, they're talking to the client, and they're saying, you know, we need X, Y, and Z for the Medicaid application. And I said, well, hold on. Number one, you're not going to qualify because of the way the math worked.
Right.
Mom wasn't going to qualify financially, so applying wouldn't have done anything.
Right.
But number two, Mom doesn't want to be in the nursing home, and Dad doesn't want her there, and kids don't want her there.
Right.
So why are we going to apply for Medicaid for a place that no one wants to be in when turns out there are some alternatives? So the alternative we don't usually talk about on the radio, but it's a very real alternative, and we support our clients 100%, is assisted living. And there's a couple different variations of it. And they've looked at a couple assisted living places.
Right.
Less care, less expensive, still can do the job for quite a while. Now, Kim, you know of a bunch of places like this. There are a number of different facilities where it's kind of like a campus.
Right.
And there's an independent senior building, there's a assisted living, then there's a memory care unit, and then there's a skilled nursing home, and it's all kind of on the same grounds.
Right.
So I suggested to them, well, it sounds like she needs memory care and she may need more sooner than later, but you, sir, don't. So would it be all right if you're in this building and she's in that building? You can see her every day.
Right.
And we have a lot of clients who've taken advantage of that. And he said, nope, not going to work for me.
Right.
Okay. So again, we're just going through their options. We don't care what they do. We just need to make sure they make an informed decision. Right.
Well, it really is doing the education piece.
Yep.
You know, it really is going through and saying, and you know, we're lucky in this area to have a lot of alternative care resources, you know, assisted livings, whatever. And each one of them is unique into the services that they provide. And so, you know, again, part of what my job is to make sure that we find them the most appropriate resource, because they do want to be together. Yeah. And there are a lot of facilities that will keep them in the same building, but they'll have to be in separate rooms, right?
Right.
And it was really super important for the two of them to be together in the same room. And so that really limits what the options are. And then you really have to look at the particular care that each of those facilities is going to provide, because she really is a higher level of care.
Right.
So we needed to look at an assisted living that was not only enhanced, but an assisted living that was enhanced and also would kind of grow with her needs so that she wouldn't have to transition, you know, out of that just to something higher. Because as we know, it's traumatic for people to bounce around.
Yeah.
So we're certainly trying to formulate the most consistent plan that we can for folks, so that they end up in the right place and they don't end up in a place where 30, you know, days down the road, the staff is like, oh yeah, this isn't the right fit sort of thing. You know,
we got to plan for the long term.
Right.
And the long term might be a relatively short period of time. You know, it might be a year, year and a half, but we consider that long term.
Right.
We don't want to jump around every 3 or 4 months.
Right.
Especially when there's things like dementia and you know, you want to really screw someone up.
Right.
Just change, you know, disorient them.
Well, and
them
it needed to be a place
times.
Where they could age together as well.
Yeah.
You know, and not just, you know, one of them.
So if you drive around, I don't care what town you live in up here, if you just drive around for probably 10 minutes, you're going to drive by some sort of building that looks like it's apartments that's or condos, but it's really an assisted living of some sort.
Right.
And they're not all made the same.
Right.
They all provide different services. And just like if you drove by and you saw a sign for a law firm,
mm-hmm.
maybe they could do a will for you. I don't know. It depends. What are they really good at and what services do they include? And when it comes to assisted livings, there are ones that don't have, that do not have Medicare, memory care
right.
units. And that's a huge thing. You don't just go and it's not a hotel. You don't just go and say, hey, I'd like a room here and here's my credit card type of thing.
Right.
They got to make sure they can take care of you. They got to make sure whatever needs you have can be taken care of in their facility. And then when we know that there's a family member that's got dementia and we know it's going to go in one direction, even if right now they don't need the memory care unit, they may sooner than later. So you're looking out for that as well, right? You're,
mm-hmm.
you're looking big picture.
Absolutely.
Diagnosis, prognosis, all of that.
Right. And we're looking at the location, you know, if there is family close by, you know, is it something that the family can get to fairly easily? I mean, there are lots of things that go into looking at what the right fit is for someone. And then we also look at the financial piece, right? I mean,
we're getting there. That's a big piece. And
right.
people probably would be surprised on what our opinion is of the financial piece.
Right.
Because they would probably assume that we feel a certain way.
Right.
So we knocked off home care. We knocked off independent senior living. All right. And they don't want a nursing home, at least not now. They really want to be together.
Yep.
So now we're zeroing in on assisted living. And so within the assisted livings, because of how she's doing, one facility said, yep, we can take her right now and get her out of that nursing facility. And number one, it's cheaper, right? That's good.
Right.
It wasn't a place where the husband and wife wanted to be at long term.
Correct.
Okay. And there's another assisted living where they do want to live together. And in fact, that assisted living said, we will only take mom if dad is there too.
Right.
Okay. So what the family's thinking of doing, I think they're going to do this, is they're going to go to the immediate assisted living location where they can get mom there right away. And then in the next couple months, their plan will be to then move mom so she could live with dad at this other assisted living. And after they left, you and I talked for a little while and I said what their plan is. And I'm not going to use the words you used. I actually don't remember the words you used, but I know that you were not happy with that plan. And when I say you weren't happy, it's not that it really matters whether Kim Hans is happy or not.
Right.
It was, you saw some flaws in that plan. So
mm-hmm.
what kind of flaws did you see?
Well, I feel like the more we move somebody, the greater the potential is for decline, particularly when we were dealing with somebody with memory issue.
Yep.
And I also feel like with husband and wife, because they're so attached to one another, I wanted to make a plan sooner rather than later where they could be together. And I felt like moving her, transitioning her into this interim was going to hurt that a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the biggest issue really was just the multiple transitions that she's going to have to make.
Right.
And it is what it is, and hopefully she'll be fine and do okay.
So they had a really interesting choice, because the way the math shook out for their family and the fact that husband does exist, which is a spouse is the most important thing when it comes to elder law planning, the existence of a spouse.
Right.
We were going to be able to get her qualified for Medicaid to cover her nursing home starting December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I suggested to them is, why don't you keep mom where she is? And when you're ready for assisted living location number two, that's going to take both of you.
Right.
That's when you move her out, but we'll have her covered by Medicaid for the rest of her nursing home. Now, there's one problem with that. That means that she's still in a nursing home. Right. And obviously, we could save a boatload of money on the private pay of assisted living versus the Medicaid paying for the nursing home.
Right.
But it does mean you're living in a nursing home, and that's something they were really dead against. So again, our job is to give them options and inform them. You know, believe it or not, even though you have too much, we can get you qualified, and this is how we'll do it.
Right.
Oh, by the way, it means you're staying here, but it's one move instead of two.
Well, and there's a lot, unfortunately, with a lot of families, too, and this is what I find, particularly with this one circumstance, there's a lot of baggage that comes with the word nursing home.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids make that promise, I'll never put you in a nursing home, right? And I think, of course, nobody wants to be in a nursing home, and but some people actually do well. And so we have to look sometimes at not what we're coming into the situation with, but we have to look at the individual and say, are they doing okay? I mean, there's another client that you and I have worked with for several years now that, I mean, we've bent over backwards to find her, you know, what we and the family consider to be better placement.
Mm-hmm.
But she's currently in a skilled facility, and she's as happy as she's been.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're looking at maybe relocating her out west with one of her sons, but it's not about us sometimes, and it's not about the baggage that we carry into a plan. It's about the client and looking at if the client is happy and they are being taken care of. I mean, I think that's the other caveat that we have to look at. Then sometimes we have to kind of back away, because often I tell kids, your parents do have the ability to make decisions. Now, in this, you know, in the first case that we're talking about, mom probably doesn't have the ability to make the her decisions, but she's got a good supportive network. You know, in the other one where we're talking about maybe relocating this woman out to Phoenix, I mean, she has capacity to make those choices and to live where she's living. And just because it's not okay with everyone else, if that's her choice, then that's her choice.
Yeah, you know? I mean, with the second one, it's just a physical thing.
Right.
And we don't want, you know, we don't want any unsafe environments where people will end up permanently not having mm-hmm. a choice. Just like all law firms aren't created equally, all assisted livings aren't. Same goes for nursing homes. Nursing home is, you know, a four-letter word,
mm-hmm.
except for a couple that are actually not bad,
mm-hmm.
right? Assisted livings are a lot nicer. Except for a couple that aren't that nice.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
most they're a lot nicer.
You walk into assisted living and you think, wow.
So it just depends. And that's why that fit is so important.
Correct.
So short-term nursing home with Medicaid covering wasn't going to be an option. So now it looks like they're going to do the double move. So they said, all right, well, we got to do a trust.
Mm.
And the daughter and stepdaughter of mom. So I'm so confused. Hold on. You're saying we're not doing Medicaid because we're not doing a nursing home.
Right.
But you're saying we got to do a Medicaid trust.
Right.
Why?
Right.
And so, well, right now there's mom and dad.
Right.
In the future, there will not be mom and dad. I don't know what order and how that works.
Correct.
Right now they have a house. In the future, they won't have a house. They're planning on selling it. They're going to finance private paying assisted living with the proceeds and hopefully invest it and so on and so forth. But if, God forbid, something happened to mom, now dad's a single individual. He doesn't need to be in that assisted living. I don't know where he'll be living. It's up to him.
Right.
But he's, at that point, a year or two or three or 4 years older. I'd like to protect all the assets that he has.
Mm-hmm.
If he, God forbid, passed away first, I want to make sure his things don't go to his wife, who right. clearly will need a nursing home. Because, oh, by the way, the assisted living said, we are not going to take
her alone,
right? unless he's there with her.
Right.
So it's whatever you want. But we do have suggestions for each part of it. And then because we're planning for that the long term, I need to make sure the assets are protected, we avoid probate, and that if there's one death, a person who's not doing well doesn't inherit a boatload of money.
Right.
And then we have our normal predicament of trying to save half the dollars.
Right.
You can be our first caller at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. I know it's tough to call when it's such a compelling story. Right. It's a pretty good story, actually. I love it because it actually touches on everything.
Well, it does actually touch on everything. I mean, and there's been a... And I think sometimes... So I did a consultation with a woman yesterday that I met at the Alzheimer's conference back in April. Or I actually didn't meet her, but she came to the presentation that Jane Marie and Nadia did. Mm-hmm. And so she asked to come in, and I had met with her actually when I worked at the Alzheimer's Association a few years ago. And so her husband has progressed, and he doesn't have Alzheimer's, but he does have Parkinson's and Lewy body dementia. So as I'm talking to her, they had already met with an elder law attorney, and she's like, I just can't get my head around making a switch, you know, switching to another firm or having another attorney. And I said, well, what you want to understand, just to your point, is not all parts are created equal.
Right.
And there are a lot of questions that you need to ask specifically to see if, you know, somebody can put together an amazing estate plan for you, but they're not going to understand all of the long-term care options that are out there and how it complicates that estate plan.
So hold that thought. We have some seminars coming up in December. The topic is aging in place. We're going to talk about what that means in the second half of the show. But let me go through the seminar schedule really quickly here. On Tuesday, December 10th, it's only a couple weeks away, I promise you. At 2 p.m., we'll be up at the Queensbury Hotel in Glens Falls. That's 88 Ridge Street. Next day, Wednesday, December 11th, at 10 a.m., we'll be at 1455 Washington Avenue. It's a courtyard by Marriott in Albany. It's right across from SUNY. That's 10 a.m. on December 11th. Later on that afternoon, at 2 p.m. on December 11th, we'll also be in Albany at the Staybridge Suites. That's at 39 Wolf Road, right next to Colony Center and Macy's. And lastly, Thursday, December 12th, at 2 p.m., we'll be at the Holiday Inn in Saratoga Springs. That's 232 Broadway. If you'd like a seat at one of those seminars, the number is 518-465-7581, or you can email us at info@herzoglaw.com. And we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back. Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikian. Kim and I are two of the, I was going to say two of the, I'm so used to saying two of the terms.
I know.
We're two of the people. Two of the people from the Herzog Law Firm. And we're here every weekend talking about estate planning and Medicaid planning. Believe it or not.
We're not here every Saturday.
Well, but in spirit we are. The Queens we. We are here. Herzog Law Firm's here every weekend talking about estate planning and elder law and all that stuff. And I got to be honest. I think we all collectively really love doing what we do because we're helping people and we're getting them, or as best we can, getting them through tough times. And we're using our expertise, whether it's legal or in Kim's case, doing what she does, which is being an aging care manager. Did I say it appropriately?
Aging life care.
Aging life care professional. Just rolls right off the tongue. I don't know why I couldn't remember it. So we just talked about how we have some seminars coming up in December, and the topic is aging in place, and how opportunistic for us to have you here right now to give people a little sample of what aging in place is, because when I talk about it, it's about figuring out, you know, is it care at home? Is it care at a nursing home? What are we exactly are we doing? And I tend to focus on the legal part of it, trying to protect assets, avoid probate. I'm my default is to think that people want to save money, and I don't say that in a sarcastic way. It's okay to not save, but that's not a priority. The priority is the care,
right.
The right level of care in the right place. And I do my best Kim Hansen impersonation when I meet with clients to say, you know, I don't care about the next 3 months. I care about the next 3 years. Mm. So what's the right fit? Let's not rush into anything. And let's not, home sounds good, but if home's not doable, let's not do it.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about how you would define aging in place.
Well, I kind of look at it from a holistic view. I'm not looking at obviously there's the whole legal financial piece. That's huge, right? Because we need to know what people can afford. Ultimately I go in and I want to know what goals are.
Well, so just like the words aging in place does not mean home.
Well, right.
Aging in place means a plan for aging in my mind.
Right.
Wherever
it can be.
Yeah.
For some people, you know, again, when I hear some people, you know, usually immediately most people say, I want to be home, right? Yeah. So we kind of talk about what that's going to look like. And we talk about, you know, we first talk about that. All right, so let's talk about your home. And let's talk about, is that a possibility for you to be able to stay here long term, right? So we're really looking at all of the components of the house. And is it accessible? Is it going to allow for somebody to be able to, you know, just get in and out easily? Where are the bathrooms? You know, are there simple things that we can do to make a home safe in order for that plan to happen?
It's not just the inside of the home, by the way. So one of my clients this past week said, they said, we are not interested in getting care at home. I said, are you sure? And they said, well, not that home. We don't want to take care of the yard anymore. We're tired of it.
Right.
We're going to downsize. So if we do a trust, you got to convince me that we're able to sell our property, buy another condo and not deal with any of that stuff. You know, people are used to home being it's the place that they've lived in for X amount of years when they were younger and able to take care of everything and do everything. So the version of home they remember is when it wasn't a pain in the butt to go up two flights of stairs.
Right.
But in a world where that's not a very easy thing to do, aging at home might sound good. It's a good flyer, but a good, you know, seminar, but in reality, it's so specific to your family.
Right. You know, so it's the physical setting. It's a geographical setting as well. You know, I'm always looking at how far are they to their services? You know, how far are they to their doctor's appointment? You know, the doctors that they see, how easily accessible is transportation, particularly when somebody's is no longer driving? How do they get to and from the grocery store? How do they prepare their meals? So much of it is really outside of that legal and financial. And I want to make sure that I can get services that are accessible to them.
Right.
If home is really a plan. I also want to talk to them about, are you interested in maintaining the house? And what does that mean for folks? So sometimes we do talk about that downsizing. Maybe we sell the old two-story farmhouse and move into either, a ranch style home where everything's on one floor, or maybe they're ready to move into a community because, you know, as we know, when folks become socially isolated, the skill set really goes downhill very quickly.
Right.
So we want to make sure that we're providing for a plan that kind of encompasses all levels of, you know, social interaction, physical ability.
I'm glad you said social, because that's so, we're going to talk about it in a second. We have Stephen Redhook. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Yes, good morning. I'd like to ask a question about step up in stock.
Sure.
Okay, we have quite a bit of stock that is in our family trust, mm-hmm. will that be treated with the step-up rule on our demise?
Yes. So the answer is yes, it will. And to give everyone else a little backstory on what you're talking about. So you have stock that you bought once upon a time. You bought it for X, and now it's worth more than X. Is that right?
Yes.
And you decided to protect that asset during your life by putting it into a trust. And that trust somewhere in it, usually on the first page, says you are the income beneficiary of that stock.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's dividends that are being spit out by that thing, you're getting it, even though it's in a trust, and even though that trust is called an irrevocable Medicaid trust or a family trust.
Okay.
So the fact that you get that income benefit, okay, the fact that you are entitled to those dividends and interest and whatever's accruing on a brokerage account or stocks, mm-hmm. that fact means that it's going to be part of your gross taxable estate. What does that mean? Well, it means something if you have a lot of money. Estate taxes federally are $11 million plus for an individual, $22 million plus for a couple. And then in New York State, there's an estate tax that starts at $5.5 million or so per person. So it means that all that stock is going to be in the house and whatever else is in that trust is going to be, along with other things that you may own, will be subject to taxes. And for most people, there are no taxes to pay because they don't have $11 million. So as a result of the fact that it's part of the math, it's part of the pie to determine whether there's taxes, yes, absolutely, you're going to get a step up in the basis. What that means is that when your kids inherit or nephews or whoever it is that's inheriting your money, they're going to receive it in their hands for purposes of taxes. It's as if they bought it for whatever it was worth the day you died. I know you know that. I'm just making sure everyone else out there knows that.
You know, one other circumstance that we realized that my mother-in-law, before she passed away, she gave my wife some stock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it was outside the trust and everything. Now, I don't think that qualifies for step-up.
So normally it does, and it actually depends on how close to her eventual death she had given the stock. But when you give someone something during your life outright,
mm-hmm.
like it sounds like she did,
yeah.
instead of a step-up in the basis, there's something called a carryover basis. So whatever your mother-in-law's tax situation was, that becomes your wife's tax situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there will be a step-up. If those assets are also in the trust, there will be a step-up on that. The difference between what we're talking about here is if your wife decided to sell the stock that she received as a gift from her mom, there's going to be likely some tax hit there based on mother-in-law's tax basis.
One other question is, say, for instance, at some point you paid, say, $400 for a stock,
mm-hmm.
okay, and when you, on your demise, it's only worth $100, you can take the higher value, can't you? As a loss, if you wanted to?
You know, I'm not sure on that. That's going to be a question for an accountant.
Okay.
I have my suspicions, but I don't even want to say it out loud.
Okay.
I'm keeping it to myself.
Okay.
Anything else,
you.
Steve? You got three questions. You qualify for one more.
I'm good to go.
All right. Thanks for the call. You could be our second caller at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. Kim, you were talking about all these different things that you consider, and the one that I feel like people never consider is the social, because, again, home sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
But if mom's going crazy because she's just, you know, at home alone.
Right.
My grandpa was at home alone. If my mom was listening, she would call up and start telling you stories. But he would basically, like a birthday card, he would, like, type it. He would, like, label everything in the house. Why? He wasn't the type that, like, needs... It was just stuff to do.
Right.
You know, everything was pristine and perfect.
Right.
And I couldn't imagine being in that scenario without a lot of social contact.
Right.
But especially when we're dealing with, you know, it's not all physical. You can't get from point A to point B. There's a lot of mental aging,
mm-hmm.
whether it's dementia or something that's just natural, you know...
Well, and you know, the common saying that we hear, if you don't use it, you lose it sort of thing. The more isolated somebody becomes, the more apparent their disabilities are. You know, it just having normal conversation.
Yeah.
You know, if you spend a lot of time alone, you really lose the ability to have a normal conversation with somebody, to articulate things, to, you know, you don't have a whole lot to talk about when you're just by yourself all day, every day. And what I say to families a lot, think about when you're on vacation, you know, by like day three or four, you're kind of like, what day is it? What, you know, so think about somebody who already has a cognitive impairment. It doesn't even have to be, you know, significant. They can have a mild cognitive impairment. And if they don't have real contact and real practice in doing things, they can really lose those things much faster. And we see that people that are diagnosed with a mild cognitive impairment, if they're not engaged in some level of activity, they lose their skill set much quicker than somebody who would be engaged in volunteerism. I mean, and that's, you know, a lot of people say, oh, now that I have a diagnosis of dementia or cognitive impairment, I can't do anything. There's so many things that people can do. And so we really look to get them active and engaged in the community, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a light switch. It's like a dimmer.
Correct.
And some dimmers take a really long time, and people are doing just fine, and they have their faculties, and they're able to do whatever they got to do.
Right.
Now, aging in place can help with the social. People think home, and you say, wait a minute, you just said home can be very antisocial. Well,
Right. Caregivers
coming to the house can be an opportunity for being social,
correct,
but so could essentially day programs at skilled
right. Nursing
facilities.
Yep. So there are a lot of, you know, there are standalone adult day programs, and there are day programs that, like you said, that are incorporated into to a skilled facility. And we really look at what the need of the client is. You know, is it more social related or is it more medically? And what's really great about medical model is, in a medical model, they can get their medications administered. They can get their personal care needs met.
Yep.
They can get occupational, physical therapy done.
And they can pick them up and drop them off, right?
Right. So there's a lot that can happen. And a social model, you know, there's the social component, and they do activities all day long. They take trips. They have, you know, entertainers that come in. They have special classes that they offer. There's a meal during the day. They do a lot of that supportive work in reminding folks to go to the bathroom, reminding them to take the medications, where if they were left at home alone, they might forget to eat. They might forget to take those medications. They might, you know, not remember to go to the bathroom and therefore have, you know, some sort of incident or accident that will then further cause health issues. So a lot of being able to provide that supportive network, and it's a lot more affordable for folks too, and it's really a way to stretch. For a lot of working kids that are taking care of parents, I really try to have them utilize the day program because it's such a wonderful resource. I mean, we also have other resources that aren't as structured, I would say, and professional, and that would be like a local senior center that provides a plethora of activities and services.
Great use of the word plethora, by the way.
Right.
Fantastic.
That's my big word for the day.
I always think of the Three Amigos whenever I hear plethora. So we do have a caller, Barb in Boston Spa. Good morning, Barb. How are you?
Fine. As fine as I'll ever be, I guess.
Oh, boy.
I'm a client. I set up a revocable trust. I maintain myself in my home. I've been to a bunch of seminars that you have, and one of them, Aging in Place, I asked what my options were with a revocable trust, and if I couldn't continue in my home, and I didn't really feel that I got an answer that I understood, let's say. And my other question, just on, not related to this, but do we get some sort of a tax form from you
Okay, so let's attack that first question first. And so we have about 14 minutes here. So we have 14 minutes for the most complete answer that you'll ever hear. Okay. And oh, by the way, you're a client of ours. You should come in whenever you feel like it to talk to us and not have a 14-minute answer, but an hour-long answer, so you know exactly what the lay of the land is. Okay. So that's number one. So you said you have, I'm sorry, Barb, you have a revocable trust. So that's a trust that is not protecting anything for long-term care needs. It's not going to help you qualify for Medicaid. That's all right. A lot of people have revocable trusts. There's lots of good reasons for making them and having them and keeping them. There's also good reasons for one day turning them into a Medicaid trust, okay? And we like to tell people it's never too late to transition it because, among other things, we could get this whole aging-in-place community Medicaid program set up even though we haven't gone through a five-year look-back period because there isn't a five-year look-back period. So back to you for a second here. We're talking about your revocable trust. You live at home, and you're saying what happens if you can't live at home anymore, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so does that mean that we've tried getting help and assistance at home, and we've looked at day programs, and we've talked to family and tried to cobble together a plan that works, and it just didn't work? Or is it that we haven't really looked at that yet? The first part of your question, right? So you're saying you can't be at home after all that stuff.
Possibly, yeah. Okay. I'm looking ahead.
Right. So what I would do, and again, it's not as simple as a phone call here. It's more of a in-depth, let's see everything else going on. But I would probably encourage you to turn that revocable trust into a Medicaid trust to increase your options. Number one, 5 years from now, you do qualify for a nursing home if that's someplace you had to be. And 1 month from now, you would qualify for community Medicaid, so we could use some of these options to lengthen the period of time you are at home, okay? So then one day we get to the point where whether you've been on community Medicaid or not, you just can't be at home, and you can't be in an independent senior apartment or anything like that, anywhere where we could have gotten Medicaid, community Medicaid coverage. At that point, we're now looking, are we private paying assisted living, or are we private paying a nursing home? And if we're private paying a nursing home, well, we know that we have these crisis plan options. We're able to get you qualified in like half the time using half the money and get you qualified for Medicaid in a nursing home. So what I would be looking to do is turn that trust into a Medicaid one to get the clock ticking, right? And then if it turns out that we didn't get through the 5 years and there's no choice but a nursing home, then we would go through, you know, crisis mode to come up with our other plan. And in between that, as we mentioned earlier, this hour was assisted living as an option. And that would be something you would private pay.
Okay.
How'd I do?
So, well, I listen a lot. And I just, who am I speaking with?
Well, this is not Kim. This is Dave Kabikian.
Dave?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm not sure. I mean, I've set up what I've set up, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure about having a five-year look back, for one thing.
Well, the thing is, whether you set up the trust or not, you still have a five-year look back. You have a five-year look back right here, right now, right? You're not going to qualify for 5 years unless you start the clock, and that's okay, right? Every plan is different, and what I'd say to you is if you were thinking about doing a trust, right, and you don't know what kind of trust to do, I'd say you probably should do a Medicaid trust. But you're not saying that. You already have a trust, right? You're avoiding probate, and I would assume that once upon a time when you came to our firm and we did a revocable trust, there were reasons you chose that over your other options. So I'd want to get together with you and go through those reasons again, see what's changed other than, you know, your age. See what's changed with assets and family, and is there long-term care insurance, et cetera, and not speed through it, but take an hour and go through it and figure out whether something needs to change or not. And as Kim will tell you, our job is just getting you educated so you know your options, and then you're grown up, you figure out whatever you want to do, and whatever you pick is the right option because you went, you know, you got your ducks in a row and you got your information. So there's a ton of people, you'd be surprised that they are a perfect candidate for a Medicaid trust and they never do it. And that's okay. That's what they chose. So I'm not going to say you absolutely need to change anything, but it sounds like you may want to, but we got to talk more about it.
Okay. Now, the question about...
taxes.
Tax form.
Yep.
Is there anything that comes from your firm?
Well, we send out a tax, essentially a tax packet when people have the Medicaid trust, because there are some things that they need to do with the trust tax-wise. The trust doesn't pay taxes, but the individual does. When it's a revocable trust, it's a little easier because everything's under your Social Security number anyway. Mm. But if you want, call the office or email the office, and we can email you some information about taxes and revocable trusts.
Okay, so you have to call for that if you have a revocable trust?
Yeah, if you don't mind, give a call and we'll make sure you get it.
Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for the call.
It's so interesting because I meet with people all the time that are, you know, aging, right? So that's one of the things. But they've came to the firm way back in the day when they were maybe 60, 65.
By the way, thank you. 60 and 65 is young. Can we just say that? That's a
absolutely
young age.
Absolutely. I mean, anymore, when I have somebody that comes to me and needs help and they're in their 70s, I'm like, oh gosh, they're really young.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you don't plan, right?
Right.
Planning happens when you're young.
Right.
And 60 is young. 65 is young. 70 is young.
Yeah. And so a lot of times they just tuck it away and just, you know, I've done my plan. I'm okay. You know, but as the progression of age happens, as things happen, as we need to look ahead, you need to kind of pull that out and you need to look at, you know, who you've named, what kind of plans you've made. I mean, we generally say to our clients, they should come in every 3 to 5 years, no matter what. And in my opinion, once you hit 78, 79, you should be coming in at least every 1 to 2 years, because as we age, that progression, we're more apt for things to happen, you know. And folks who are in their 60s, they may have parents still alive, you know. And so maybe they've done an estate plan, but then a parent or a relative passes away, they get some type of inheritance. Sometimes that gets missed in the whole estate plan that's been created. So it's really super. I can't stress enough for people.
Oh, and you missed the best part. It's free. You know, we don't happen to charge when people come back in and meet with us. You know, I think some other places may. I mean, if you want to come in every day, then we got to get you out at some point. But we have free seminars where you can learn a little more. We have, for our clients, client appreciation events every year. Free to learn about some other topics.
Right.
May apply to you, may apply to your kids, right?
Right.
May apply to your parents. And whenever you did come in, whenever you met with Jane Marie or Debbie or Harry, myself, Kim, whoever you met with, we didn't tell you everything that you'll ever need to know about estate planning and elder law. We told you what applied then.
At that moment, right?
Yeah. So as things change, you know, so many times people will sign their documents and then they have this like 2 pages of questions. And at first it looks like one page. And I'm like, all right, it's just one page. And they pull out the second page, Kim, when they get to the end. I'm like, oh, brother.
Right.
But they're really good questions. And they're questions that are 20 years from now.
Yep.
Well, what's going to happen when we can't live in the house anymore, but we want to sell it? And my number one answer is call me as that's happening.
Right.
Right. Like, we'll talk about it again. I'll talk about it with your trustee. You know,
right.
we could... It's good to know. I'm glad you're asking these questions, and I'll give you an answer. But you don't need to memorize it. We're a phone call away,
right?
Right. We're one meeting away. And in particular, for the clients, Kim, that you have, where you are providing aging life care professional services.
Oh, yeah. Ding ding ding
ding ding ding. when you're doing that, man, things can change in a
yeah.
day,
yeah.
right? One little slip.
Oh, so significantly.
So for your clients, you know, or educate people, when you do have clients that you're kind of like a consultant. I know you say daughter for hire, but you're really a consultant. when, how often do you want people to be reaching out to you, or for the kids to be reaching out to you to say, hey, Kim, this happened. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think with every question that they have, you know, and that's what I always say to families, you know, generally for me, because I spend so much time out in the field, I'm not an office position, right? If I'm in the office, then there's a problem. Well, because I'm out visiting, you know, I'm out seeing clients.
And, well, you got to see the house. You got to know,
right.
You know,
and I think that's what, that's the other important thing, is that people need to understand that, you know, I'm basing my assessment and I'm basing my information on sitting and having a conversation in a person's home, you know, listening to them, talking to them about what it is that they want, you know. Yep. I also take the input of kids and, you know, who their support system is. But if I'm in the office, I can't really help somebody understand what all of the complications are as they age. You know, that's a super important piece of formulating a plan for somebody. That's what I always say to people, you know, email's great because that's something I can do on the fly and on the road. But certainly, just like you guys, when somebody has a question. And the other thing that people need to realize is that the care management piece, they can have without having legal, right?
That's right.
They're kind of two separate.
That was our plan. We were going to talk about that,
yeah.
We never got
it. That's okay. I had to get it in.
Well, let me talk about our really quickly our seminar schedule coming up in December. Tuesday, December 10th at 2 p.m. will be at the Queensbury Hotel in Glens Falls. Wednesday, the 11th at 10 a.m. It's the Courtyard by Marriott in Albany, right next to SUNY. Later on that afternoon, 2 p.m. again on the 11th is going to be the Staybird Suites, 39 Wolf Road, followed by the next day, December 12th, Saratoga Springs at the Holiday Inn. The topic is what we were talking about this whole second half hour, aging in place. Kim will be at those seminars as well. We highly, highly, highly recommend you guys come, or your kids come,
please,
to learn a little bit more about it. It's not to make any big decisions. It's just to kind of get some more information, get comfortable with the people you may be working with in the future. That's a really, really big part of it.
Right.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.